This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
From the silence... From the darkness. From your nightmares. From the void. Tales from the Void. The Behind the Scenes Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tales from the Void Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm David Cummings, host of the No Sleep podcast and one of the executive producers of Tales from the Void. Joining me on this episode is author Matt Demirsky. Fans of the No Sleep podcast will be quite familiar with many of Matt's stories, as we have adapted 24 of them for the podcast over the years. One of Matt's stories that captivated our listeners was a story called The Black Square. And it was this story that caught the attention of Tales from the Void showrunner Francesco Loschiavo. He adapted The Black Square for the premiere episode of Tales from the Void. I had the pleasure of speaking with Matt from his home in New Zealand as we talk about his writing and how The Black Square came to be. Not only onto the page, but now onto the screen. And so, join me as we delve into the dark world of the void. Matt Demirsky, author extraordinaire, longtime No Sleep podcast collaborator. Welcome to Tales from the Void Behind the Scenes podcast. And it's exciting to be able to talk to you about the premiere episode, an episode we've titled Into the Unknown, based on your story, The Black Square. Thanks for being with us, Matt.
Yeah, great to be here. Always a pleasure.
Awesome. Now, I was doing a bit of research for this, and I was looking at the number of stories that we've done of yours on the No Sleep podcast, and I count 24 stories. So clearly one of the most prolific authors that we've collaborated with. And it goes all the way back to season one, episode two, where we did your story, The Basement, and love that story. One of my faves from, literally the start of the show. And then some of the others that stood out to me, season two, episode 25, we did your story, Psychosis, a story you're very well known for. Incredible, obviously, psychological horror. Another favorite of mine is season five, episode 24, House Moravec, which was a great story. Nicole Doolin was a part of that one. She did such a great job. And then on season 10, episode 16, The Black Square. And of course, that's the main story we're here to talk about today. So yeah, thanks for being such a big part of the podcast, especially in the early days. So Matt, we're doing this interview. I'm in Canada and you are in the land of Kiwis and Hobbits, New Zealand. And I don't detect a Kiwi accent from you. So tell us how you ended up way down on the other side of the world.
Oh boy. So this was an odyssey. I had been writing, horror science fiction for probably 10 years at that point. And I had also, as a hobby, been like coding and working on computer games. And so a friend of mine says, hey, there's a job opening for like a horror fantasy RPG computer game in New Zealand. And I was like, I'm not going to move to New Zealand. That's ridiculous. And all my friends were like, no, you should really go. And I'm like, oh, geez. Okay, thanks. But actually, they were serious. And I applied and I got in. And it was basically a dream job where I could diffuse all the skills and hobbies I've ever done. Moved over here in 2018. just enough to get situated, didn't have the whole world shut down for COVID. And it's been quite the odyssey. But now, like, I have to say, I'm so glad I moved here because, you know, I just met my partner. I'm getting married in a couple of months. So super psyched. Everything's going well.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations on that. Did the coding and the gaming and all that stuff, were there any titles released? Any games that we and the audience might be familiar with?
Well, I was hired to work on Path of Exile 2, which, funnily enough, is launching in the next 3 to 6 months. It's like, you know, phased betas and stuff like that. But I did also work on and continue to work on Path of Exile 1, which has been live this entire time. So if anyone wants to play those, that's primarily all my narrative design work in the horror space and things that happens in that game. There have been other writers at times, but right now it's just me.
Well, there you go. I know a lot of people are going to be running to check out that game because that's awesome. Well, congratulations on such a change in your life. I mean, that's pretty substantial. I'm so glad it's worked out for you.
Oh, it's been incredible. And I have to say that when I got hired, they told me, oh, it'll just be, you know, maybe 2 years. And here we are 6 years later.
Always works out that way, right? Now, you mentioned you consider yourself a horror and science fiction writer, and so often the worlds of horror and sci-fi, they're so closely intertwined. Do you kind of consider them wholly separate in terms of genres, or do you kind of, when you're crafting a story, do you just see them kind of blending together for your story ideas?
I think you can perceive like two dials, you know. You got there's a horror dial with various genres on that from the stuff that I don't write, which is like slasher, gore, body horror, and then all the way into like the psychological spectrum. And I think intersecting with that, maybe like a Venn diagram, is science fiction, because some horror problems, some horror creatures can be approached with a scientific angle, smart characters making smart decisions. And those are actually always the movies that I love, what I grew up on, you know, the Twilight Zone-esque characters where they make intelligent decisions and their downfall is usually an emotional decision or, you know, a character flaw. So I do think they're very intertwined, but they can be dialed out of each other. Like, you can absolutely write a horror story with no science fiction or vice versa, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. They can exist as separate, but I always find when they blend together, they almost seem to heighten each element, each aspect of the story. So it's interesting your perspective on that. And I think you kind of answered this question, but when you think about horror, whether it's with sci-fi or not, you say you lean away from certain subgenres. Is there one kind of subgenre? I guess psychological would be one, but you know, you're not gore, slasher, monsters, but what about paranormal? Are you someone keen to write a ghost story?
See, I would absolutely love to delve into any subgenre at least once. And I think I have done paranormal in the sense of, let's say, like a haunting or things like that. But of course, my characters quickly, the first thing they do is try to figure out the rules. How does this work? What is this thing? You know, after a little bit of panic. So it's hard for me, I think, to stay in the paranormal zone. Because let's say I'll watch a movie about paranormal activity, and I'm just screaming the whole time, just move out of the house. Just leave. Right. Like, go stay with a friend. You know, that's what I would do.
Yeah, exactly. It seems so logical when you can separate yourself from that. And it's interesting, too, because we talked about your story, The Basement, from way back in season one, and it's been around for 13 years now. I guess I shouldn't worry too much about spoilers, but I won't go too much into detail. But that's a great story because, to me, in a way, it's almost like this haunted house story. And then there's the twist reveal at the end when you realize it's not a haunted house story. And so I love that element, the way you can bring that together where you're portraying something that's just very creepy and what's happening. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, there was a very logical reason for things happening the way they did. And so I understand that story, The Basement, it was based on some real events that happened to you.
Yeah, actually. So in my actual life, my family actually was on vacation. You know, I did actually hear something metallic fall in the basement near me, which to this day, I have no idea what that could possibly have been. And I did hide in the dark for a very long time, thinking there is absolutely, definitely intruder in this house. And so, like, that's where the start of that story came from. And the second half of the story came from another real experience where I had had a dream that someone nearby was dying. Like, I think it was my neighbor. I somehow in the dream knew it was my neighbor. And everything was red and flashing, and it was very scary, and I was doing my best to try to save him, but I couldn't. And I woke up, and there were ambulance lights on the wall, almost like a shot from a movie. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. And my neighbor had actually died. And so like those two things kind of fuse to create the kernel of that idea.
Tragic tale, of course. But yeah, it's interesting how a couple of different events like that just get fused into an amazing horror story. Now, the story that we've adapted for Tales from the Void, of course, The Black Square. It's the basis of the episode, the premiere episode called Into the Unknown. And as always, I'm fascinated by where stories, how they germinate in your mind. How did you conjure up the story, The Black Square?
I, again, started from a real basis where I was living on a suburban street and we had had some incidents with neighbors. Nothing like happens in that story that gets out of hand, but there was tension there. There was unhappiness there. And I thought, what if something strange happened in this neighborhood? You know, how would that escalate tensions between us, especially with the way that we all react to things? And there was actually a specific real moment where we had had a sort of an argument with a neighbor. And my house was a bunch of 20-something nerdy guys. So we're like, we do not want to, you know, get involved in an altercation. And someone said, well, oh, let's call the police, you know, if anything happens. And there was a beat. And then we all just started laughing. And I realized this is where the Black Square's original like kernel came from, is like, it's so strange that our society has come so far in the wrong direction that the thought of calling the police, a suggestion, is taken as a group joke. That we're just, of course, we're not going to do that, because actually that's a very dark road to go down and to bring that kind of force into the situation. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting how, not to spoil certainly anything from the episode, but there is a scene where one of the citizens calls the police, and there is this sense of like, will they show up? If they do show up, what will things escalate? What will happen? And yeah, I think it's a very timely commentary on what's going on in our world, certainly our Western world, where the police can be looked at as being kind of, we need their help. But at the same time, we've seen far too many stories where the police show up and things turn out for the worst.
And I think that comes down to a lot of factors. But one I like to focus on is the fact that we all have different perspectives. And so the people involved in a paranormal situation, as these stories do, they know what's happening. They've seen it. It's real. And as the episode does illuminate for us a little bit without spoilers, if someone's from the outside of that perspective, they have no idea what you're saying. They're thinking you're crazy. They're thinking this guy is nuts, or you're just trying to get attention. There's communication gap there. And it's like, if you could just get this person to come see, if you could get them there in real life. And I think in a couple of the stories that I write, they do get cops to show up. But the funny thing is, they still don't bridge the communication gap. The cops are frightened or scared or still choose to run off or even become aggressive because they don't know what you know. They don't see what you see. And so like filtering things through their lens and filtering things through our lens, those two things don't meet. And that's, I think, the biggest danger in our society right now is we are not actually saying the same things to each other.
When you were coming up with this idea, like you say, of these two different groups of people trying to communicate something, there's a threat, there's something going on. There's something about just a black square, just the square that hovers in the middle of the neighborhood that's fascinating, and yet it's kind of nothing. And I'm curious, was that always your vision for that entity? Or was there, did you ever think it could be something monstrous, or it could be something more threatening other than just this almost non-threatening, ambiguous square that people have no idea what it's there for?
There's two places this came from, which is actually a really enjoyable and kind of scary at times process of figuring this out. So I was like, all right, what should the threat be for this neighborhood? So I opened up a paint program. I was just looking at a blank white screen for honestly hours. It was racking my brain. I was asking my friends. I was like, what could this be? And they're like, is it a creature? I'm like, too obvious, too threatening. Like, this has to be something that's out there. You're scared of it, but it's not doing anything. And that's the key. It's not doing anything, because the moment it does something, that's when you're like, okay, this is a threat. Let's react in a military manner or react in like a procedural manner. The whole point is to just be like, there's a problem. We don't know what it is. There's something there. And the funny thing is, we were all staring at a white screen. Like, I actually had my friends gathered around for this one. I think someone said, like, this is kind of ominous already. Just a blank white, I don't know, square. And I was like, that's not enough. Like, oh, wait. And we filled it in with black. And we're like, oh, crap. Like, well, that's ominous. Like, white versus black makes all the difference. Suddenly, it's a shrouded thing. It's a nightly thing. It's a hidden thing. Whereas a white square, you don't think there might be something in it. A white square is like, that's giving off light, that's giving off energy. That's a very different presence in your neighborhood. And honestly, if the story was about a white square, you'd have people thinking, oh, this is angelic. Oh, this is heavenly. Like, then you get a whole different route of like weird, terrifying, like devotion and stuff like that. But a black square, no one's liking that. And I was like, perfect. This has absolutely nothing connected to it. There's no myths. There's no presuppositions or anything you could assume about it. It just is. And you know absolutely nothing. And that was the key, that you know nothing about this square. And it was perfect.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. Like you said, if it was a white square, we have these presuppositions of what that means. And one thing that came to my mind as you explained that is that if it was a white square, I feel like it would have a flatness or a almost like it would be a plane that you couldn't do anything with. But when you have a black square, it almost evokes a natural understanding that there's something, there's depth to it. Because it's black, there's no light in there. And so you see these characters who want to, like, you know, what happens if you throw something in there? Or what happens if you stuck your finger in there? And so that just lends itself so well to that. Now, you've had a chance to watch the episode. Your story was adapted by showrunner Francesco Loschievo, and it was directed by Joe Lynch, of all people, a very well-known horror film director. And so I'm curious, how did you feel watching your story come to life on screen?
Oh man. So I got my fiance, we got our pizza, we got it all set up to watch. It was a fantastic watch. So I had always talked to her and probably also on these interviews about the Twilight Zone. And I felt like I was watching an episode of the Twilight Zone, like sourced from my very own material, because without giving any spoilers, they distilled it down to like the pure essence of what they were going for. And the sort of the interview actually with me, the way that what it was cut and what they said after the episode, I was like, that's what they were going for. Those are like the statements of what they were looking to do, and they did it, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's, you know, you mentioned the Twilight Zone, and I don't think there's any spoilers here, but I know that for me, the story evoked a classic Twilight Zone episode, and I know you've referenced it as well, called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. And again, it's a classic Twilight Zone story. And it really does touch on that theme of you have a neighborhood that slowly really kind of gets driven mad and turns against themselves. And then there's this big reveal about how there's these entities outside of who these people are. It's people who, I mean, the title is The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, but you have these entities that are kind of trying to do harm to the human race, and they do it so subtly and so simply by just getting them paranoid and then turning them on themselves. And it's, as you say, your story and the adaptation really, really focuses on that.
Yeah, I love the episode for that as well, because rather than having any outside monsters, this was purely an emotional interplay, almost like a stage play, but with, you know, it's much higher production and camera shots and values. Oh, it's just pleasantly, like, it was firing on all cylinders. I love it.
Yeah, I think it works so well. And what's interesting is that, I mean, your story itself has this, but this adaptation, it's really about the nuance and subtlety of it. It's not, obviously, it's not a story that's full of jump scares and gore and stuff like that. But to me, this story really allows the audience to draw their own conclusions and sort of insert their own subjective horror into it. Because again, it's like, what is this black square? I will, as an audience member, I will assume through my own things that scare me, I will kind of put those things into this black square. And I'm curious, are you fine with a story that is, you know, for the audience, it's kind of make it what you will kind of story? Or for you, was there kind of an angle or a certain conclusion that you would hope the viewers would experience?
There are stories I write with very pointed, like, this is what it's about. But I think this one, absolutely, they captured, this is your own personal struggles in your own neighborhood, because it's the difference in perspectives I was talking about. As the writer, I don't know what your perspective is, but you do. And so the black square can represent that, because it's everything and nothing. You know, it's just a problem, and how you react is up to you and your community, you know?
And when I had the pleasure of interviewing Joe Lynch, and we talked a lot about this story, of course. And one thing that I found interesting is that, especially watching this episode, is that to me, the black square, it's kind of the term we use in film or storytelling is it's a MacGuffin, which is, you know, it's central to the story and everyone's talking about, everyone's looking at this thing, but the thing itself really isn't what the story is about. There's something fascinating about that. So does it matter what the black square is, or is it really just all about the reaction to the square?
The black square is absolutely a MacGuffin. And I think 99% of the story is definitely about just the reaction. And in each individual adaptation or the episode or the story, the written story, you know, there is an ultimate point, because there does kind of have to be to give you that satisfying, like, this is what you're left with. But yeah, it's definitely about the people around it rather than the MacGuffin itself.
It's interesting, too, the adaptation, what Francesco adapted, the way people just sort of naturally fall into a certain hierarchy or certain groups. There are people who are in this neighborhood, in this apartment complex, who are clearly, they just want to sort of stand in the background and sort of see what's going on. And then you get people who are inquisitive. They kind of want to know from almost a scientific perspective, what is the square? And then, of course, you get the people who kind of, they're the leaders and they're going to step up and you're going to listen to me. I'm going to control this whole situation. Was that something that you wanted to draw out from the story? And I'm curious, as you said, there was kind of a real life basis of this story. Did you see that happening where there were the tough guys and the meeker people and the people who were just curious?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so glad that they preserved that and sort of built on that in the episode, because that is the reality. And we live in that. The community at large, they're not going to help you. You cannot depend on this cloud of people who are out there, you know, experiencing the bystander effect. They're not going to save you. So we do in our very own lives see the vast majority of people do nothing. And then there are a few heroes and there are a few supposed villains. Like, everyone's got their own perspective. But if you're the kind of person that asks questions and wants to, like, do something, you are absolutely going to generate your own resistance from people who are at their base. They're fearful. Maybe they have a good reason to be, maybe not, but they're like, they don't want you to do anything, but you think you need to do something, and there will be a clash. And that's life.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so well portrayed. And it's amazing how that interaction, as we've already said, can create not just conflict, but there are consequences, and those consequences can be horrifying for sure. I'm curious if in this episode, again, for anyone who has not yet seen it, we're not going to spoil anything, but there's almost a subtle, I don't know if you say a reveal about what the black square actually is, or at least what effect it could have. And I'm curious, did you find that taking a little bit of license to kind of show a little bit about what the black square is, shall we say, capable of, did you like that aspect, or did you find that was an interesting turn?
Well, normally I'm very protective of my work, but I actually really liked what they did here. And again, no spoilers, but a few bits of things happening, and then ultimately the episode did decide to say, like, here's what's inside the black square, you know, for the episode. Big fan of these things, because there's a lot to think about there. In my written story, I did actually have some things happen that might have been related to the black square, that it was important that you weren't exactly sure what was happening, and they did have that as well. And so, like, there is that escalating tension, that escalating fear, because if literally nothing ever happened, the escalation would probably taper off. But these inciting incidents are like, you can't even be sure this was related to the black square at all. But the fact that it even happened in the neighborhood, obviously people are going to link it. They're going to start connecting the dots, even if those dots aren't there. And there you have your escalation to, you know, more dramatic showdowns.
Well, it is. I'm thrilled that you like the way it turned out. And I really think the audience will love it, too, because it's interesting, too. Of course, the title of the whole series, Tales from the Void, and it just makes such perfect sense to start with a story that literally features a void that evokes all of these emotions and conflicts. And so that's what we as the audience are going to be plunging into for this series. And Matt, I'm just so thrilled that Francesco and John and the whole crew that created this series tapped into your story because it's such a perfect way. No matter where it appears in the list of episodes, the fact that it's the first episode is it's great. And I'm also thrilled that it's such a popular No Sleep podcast story. And I think our fans are going to love to see it come to the screen in front of them.
Well, it's been a fantastic experience. I can't wait to see the other episodes too, because you know, there was always this years of waiting on this production and be like, all right, is this going to be good? Like, I've been telling my parents about this for so long. And like, all right, now I can send it to them.
Yeah, it's funny. And I've spoken with a number of the authors, and they all mention that same thing. And I'm in the same boat, because Francesco reached out to me, it feels like 4 years ago or something. And when it started, I'm sure I've already said this on this podcast, that it originally was just going to be a little YouTube series, like a really short, even shorter than the 25, 30 minute episodes that we're doing, shorter adaptations just on YouTube. And to see the way Francesco has built this into what it is, it's very impressive. And so, yeah, it's something that a lot of people, I don't think, fully understand, that when you see something come to the screen like this, this is not just slapdash stuff that people throw together. It takes years and a great deal of commitment. And Francesco and the team have shown that. And I'm thrilled that you can be a part of that.
Yeah, this has been something of an odyssey, even just for me. And he's the one actually making it. And I remembered phone calls, like you said, 3-4 years of phone calls and emails and updates and just following what's going on. And then, like, you know, all the, let's see if the Canadian government can fund some of this and all that kind of stuff in the background. Like, I was following that, like, come on, let's do it. Let's get this done.
That's right. I always point out that this series wouldn't be made, really wouldn't be possible with the budget that we had without all these Canadian tax grants and credits and stuff like that. So as a Canadian, I can just say to everybody, you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm half Canadian, so it's like, did I put in a good word for him? I don't know. We'll see.
There you go. Perfect. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us, and all the way from New Zealand, as it were, and continued success with the career. And again, congratulations. I hope all the wedding plans turn out wonderfully.
Oh, thanks. Very excited.
All right. Well, thanks again, Matt, and I hope everyone loves Into the Unknown. I want to thank Matt Demirsky for joining me and bringing us face to face with the horrors found within the Black Square. Tales from the Void, the Behind the Scenes podcast, is a Creative Reason Media production in conjunction with Envoy Entertainment. Music by Alex Cuervo and Brandon Boone. Thank you for being with us. Join us next time for a deeper plunge into the void.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.